Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
I've got a lot of thoughts about communion because I think about it a lot. But the main one is I've always been really scared of communion. I've always been a little bit thrilled as a tacker of the idea of, you know, dipping my bread in the wine and not the Ribena, but I was always just still pretty scared. As a little tacker, communion was a solemn and official occasion. In the church I grew up in, we would all walk up the aisle, form a big circle, and the old posh folk in the church would hand out the bread, hand out the wine, and walk around, and we'd go sit back down. The blood of Christ, the body of Christ, blah, 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 blah. I have a really vivid memory of the pastor from this church saying something regarding parental permission to have communion, and that's where the fear began. I heard that and I wondered why I needed permission. Was it something special? Was it a treat? Was it dangerous? Was it something only adults can do? Anyway, I needed permission. How was I going to do that? I didn't really want my parents to know that I wanted to take communion because I didn't know anything about communion. And once I got permission from my parents, how would the old posh people up the front know that I had permission to take communion? So I thought, well, I'll just do what everyone else does. I'll just walk up there, put my hands in front of me and bread, yep. Blood, yep. Sick, we're on. I know what to do. But then little Cozzy found herself in a Catholic church in the middle of Kerala, India, on a weekend retreat. And not only did I not speak the language, but even more disconcerting, there were no posh old people, and we didn't walk up the pews to get communion. In fact, there were only a few select little girls dressed in white who walked up and had communion. I mean, I think it was communion. 8-year-old Cozzy thought when you walked up and received something from the front, it was communion. So in my head, it's communion. I still don't know. And then I remember communion in a... Wow, the word communion's losing its meaning. Anyway, we'll keep on saying it. I remember communion in another church, in another country. And I felt a hand on my shoulder as I got up with the rest of the congregation to go and receive communion. And a voice said, oh no, dear, wait a sec. Hang on, are you baptized? No? Oh, you can't have communion. Communion's only for people who are baptized. All right, cool. I'll take note of that for next time. Next church. Yeah, kid, sure. Take a big sip of red wine. Yes. Next church. Bread? Yeah, sorry, nah. We have wafer-thin paper, and here's some juice to flush it down when it gets stuck in your throat. Cool. Next church, eat the bread before you get given the wine. Next church, eat the bread and wine. Whoa, whoa, Phil, once you sit down, then you can eat it, but wait for the man at the front to, you know, read from a book. So not only was communion a different and unknown situation in each church, but I never knew when it was going to happen. It's a bit like a pop quiz at school. At school, you know a pop quiz is a possibility. Do you call it pop quizzes? Pop quizzes here? Yeah, cool. I was homeschooled. I don't know. I don't know why I'm using this metaphor, simile. You don't know if you need a prep for a pop quiz because you don't know if you'll get it. And when you do get a pop quiz, communion, you feel unprepared and a little bit flustered. So communion was an unknown event. It required confused little Cozzy to stop jittering and act solemn and stern, to walk up an aisle slowly, when my brain was compiling all of the previous confusing experiences of communion that I had that have told me that I shouldn't be there. So when Mum and I came to West City for the first time, we sat in the aisle on the pew that Nina's on, or maybe it was where MJ is, one of those two, and I heard Kelly talk about communion, and I was like, oh shit, pop quiz. But then I heard Kelly read the lines about those who have tried and those who have failed being welcome at the table. And I was introduced to a table that had no prerequisites for me to eat at. And I was flabbergasted. At that time, I was fed up with the whole God thing. She'd really been rubbing me the wrong way. The church had been really angering me. The church had never unveiled communion for me. It had never helped me wipe the fog from my goggles. I've been diving a lot. It never acknowledged that I might not know about or feel welcome for communion. I was afraid to partake in communion because it had always felt like everyone else had something special about them that made them suited for the table, but not me. And every time I ate the bread and dipped it in wine, I felt like I was lying. And all of that changed that first day at West City. I was still confused about communion, and I still am. I still don't really know what it is, why it is, but I'm pleasantly and safely confused. I've been shown that other people have foggy goggles and other people have racing and anxious thoughts as they walk down the aisle to partake in communion. I've been shown that my experience has not been the anomaly, but pretty close to the norm. And I'm allowed to partake in communion while openly confused, with no rules holding me back. Here I am welcome, and here I am no longer afraid. Thanks.
Great. Well, wonderful to be with you today. One of my favorite places, actually, to come and worship is just something very, very special here at West City, and thank you for letting me be part of it today. And I've been asked to take part in your series on Jesus, this extraordinary leader. And to answer a very specific question, to look at the way that Jesus uses questions and how he's a leader through the questions that he asks. So let me start then by asking you some questions, like as a kind of little trivia quiz of sorts. Let me see. Trivial Pursuit. Who's your champion Trivial Pursuiter here in the church? Answer this question. How many questions is Jesus asked in the Gospels? How many questions is Jesus asked in the Gospels? Anyone want to give a stab answer? 350. 350? Scale it down. 370? No, that's scaling it up. Scale down. 70, scale it up. 100, scale it up. Down. This is going to take a very long time. 183 questions. Not much more interesting, though, because that's just like a 183, who cares. But how many does he answer directly? Right. So he gets asked 183 questions. How many does he? Okay, you asked that question. Here the answer is. Like, how many? Okay, someone said three. Very good. Now, it's actually a matter of dispute because, like, it's one of these quite awkward things. It depends on your translation and everything, what you're working with. But somewhere between 3 to 8 questions, he answers just bang on. Yep, that's the answer. The others, he tends to answer back with a question. And in fact, so then your next question is, how many questions does Jesus ask? You might think so, but you're wrong. So up. 183 upwards, kind of go north. 241, go north. Go north. Go south. 307. So there, 307 recorded questions of Jesus. And let's just have a look at some of them. So they're quite buried. Here are 10 of them. So I promise you, I'm not going to ask you all 307 questions of Jesus. You will get out of here sometime today. But here are 10. Here are 10 from Matthew's Gospel. If you are kind only to your friends, how are you different to anyone else? Even pagans do that. Good question. Can any of you by worrying add a single moment to your lifespan? What do you think of that one? Why are you anxious about clothes? Very pertinent. And why worry about a speck in a friend's eye when you have a log in your own? Oops. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Probably not. Why are you terrified? Because we are in a storm and the boat is about to sink, thank you very much. It's a perfectly reasonable feeling, but why are you terrified? Even though you're about to drown, why are you terrified? Okay. Why do you harbor evil thoughts? Can the wedding guests mourn so long as the bridegroom is with them? Do you believe I can do this? Do you believe I can do this? What did you go out in the desert to see? And so it goes on, just heaps and heaps of questions. And like each one of those questions forces you to think more deeply. And it's like it's the way that Jesus leads and guides us and develops us. He says, like, come on, you asked me this. Like, sorry, that's not relevant. Like, let me ask you the question that you should have asked. And 307 times he kind of puts people on the spot. Like, think about this, think a little bit more deeply. And today I'm wanting us to look maybe at just one question of Jesus that he asked twice. If we have time, I might go into a second one. And the question is actually, like, it's very fascinating. It's a question that you would think that we all want Jesus to ask of us. Because Jesus asked this question, Mark chapter 10, he asked it twice. What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? Now, I'm the Messiah, I'm the ruler of everything, I'm the king of the universe, but never mind, there's little old you, and here I am, Lord over everything, and I asked you the question, what do you want me to do from you? But it comes in two very different contexts, and let me just read to you. So it's a longish passage, so kind of buckle in, and I'll read it out, and just like note where the question comes. So Mark chapter 10, we're working from Mark chapter 10, verse 32. They were on their way up to Jerusalem, where Jesus was going to be crucified. So this is like getting towards the end of his ministry, with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen. We are going up to Jerusalem, he said, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with, but to sit on my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Not so with you. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said, call him. So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus. Your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. So there you go. Did you notice the two very different contexts of those questions? The first is just awkward, isn't it? Like, I mean, just Like, did you get the context? They're on the way to Jerusalem. People are really anxious. They realize this is a dangerous journey. It's not going to end well. And Jesus, in fact, tells them, I know it's not going to end well. And he says, you know, we're going to Jerusalem, and there I'm going to be betrayed. I'm going to be handed over, and people are going to spit on me, and they're going to flog me, and I'm going to be killed. And like, that's it. And then James and John come up and say, Jesus, would you please do for us whatever we asked you to do? We've got something we want to ask you. And Jesus says, well, what do you want me to do for you? And they say, well, given that you're about to die, presumably you're going to be getting to glory sometime soon, and you're able to hand out all the goodies that kind of go with that, and we really want to be important forever and forever. So is it okay? Like, we'd like to sit on the left-hand side and the right-hand side of you and your glory. Like, that would be super cool. Thank you very much. Like, I mean, it's a tad insensitive, don't you think? I mean, like, have you just heard Jesus say, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to go to Jerusalem and get in there soon, and I'm going to be crucified and spat on and flogged. Like, I mean, what would be your instinct? Great. You know, your inheritance. Like, what is it? Like, I mean, like, it's bizarre in some ways that they would do this, but they do. They do. And like, when I was reading, I was kind of reminded, I have three children. They're all married, grown up now. But I can remember when they were kids. And I was pastoring a church in Auckland at that time. And we'd often have people from the church around for a meal. And whenever people came around for a meal, then it meant there would be dessert and there'd be chocolates and there'd be all kinds of things that there weren't usually. And so our kids loved those occasions. Like, they had these super sweet teeth. And they'd usually take part in the meal with us. But then they'd notice that there'd be some dessert or something left over. And they'd have to go to bed, and we'd engage in the adult conversation and everything else. And they were supposed to be sleeping, but like, the moment the guests would be out the house, they would just come charging out their room and say, oh, there's still chocolates left, and like, where's the dessert, and can we have some more? And like, they'd be super enthusiastic, so they'd think, no, we're going to get all these. And we'd say, well, you know, it's not very good to have a sugar high just before you go to sleep, and you know, why not wait till tomorrow, you can store them up in them. And they'd be like, yes, yes, but can we eat them now? And it didn't matter what we'd say, like, we'd give them reason after reason, this is not a good time to kind of be eating all these chocolates now. They'd just be, yes, but can we eat them, can we eat them now? It's like, boom, 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 not going to listen to a word you say, just give us those chocolates. And it's almost like that with James and John. I'm going to die. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be blah, 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 blah. Yes, you're going to die. Okay, but can you please give us the left and right-hand seats? So, like, we want to make sure that we do okay with the inheritance. Thank you very much. Like, that's the thing that really matters to us. Like, not a moment of, oh, my goodness. Can we support you in some way? Can we help you in some way? Can we maybe persuade you not to go to Jerusalem? It's just like, oh, my goodness, this is opportunity, isn't it? And so Jesus, like, he carries through. So remember how it started? They came to him, they said, Jesus, will you do for us whatever we asked you to do? Blank check, please. Like, you're vulnerable at the moment. We can catch you. We can see, like, you're quite morbid. Maybe you'll say yes to anything. Like, okay, so do whatever we asked you to do. And Jesus, like, he's just, so what do you want me to do for you? You who are amongst the most privileged people in the world, who've been able to journey with me, who know me, have my time all the time, is there still something more that I could do for you? Yes, you can guarantee our position forever, left and right hand side. And yes, you don't know what you're asking for. You seriously don't know what you're asking for. Can you have the baptism that I'm going to have? And can you drink from the cup I'm going to drink from? Yes, they say, we can. Like, did you notice how quickly they said it? Jesus asked the question, and they answered me, yes, sure, not a problem, we can do it. Like, blah, 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 we can manage this. We know what we want, we're going to get what we want, come what may. No question about it. And Jesus, like, he makes the saddest of comments, doesn't he? He says, like, you don't know what you're asking, but you will be drinking from the cup that I drank from, and you will be baptized with the baptism that I'm being baptized from. But to give you the seats on the left and the right, that's not actually mine to give. Sorry, can't actually do that particular one. And I guess in asking that question, he then goes on, he says, but remember, if you want to be great, because I think what you're saying to me is you want to be great. Okay, if you want to be great, become a servant and become a least, like if you want to be great in the kingdom of God, become the least, that's the way there. And think about what that might mean. So I can give you what you want, but you've got to become the least. Do you know what you are asking for? Do you know? And I guess sometimes we have to like play in this little tension. Jesus comes to us and he says, "Now, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you?" And we might give the answer. For some of us, we might say, "I have no idea what I want Jesus to do for me." Others may say, "I know exactly what," but Jesus will also say, "But do you know what you're asking, and are you ready for that?" So, for example, I, in the church that I was pastoring in Auckland, those many years ago now, there was a time church growing really quickly, and we had a morning service, we had a nighttime service, and we realized that to cater for the growing numbers of people, we'd have to start a second service. And so we're kind of debating about that and like what it would involve and what the costs of that would be and everything else. And like the congregation, we want to grow. We want to be like the significant church. We want to be a church that really makes a difference. But then we come to this meeting of the church and we're talking about, so what does it take to actually really grow? And we say, well we need to make provision by having the second congregation in the morning. And then someone says, but what time will they meet? And we say, well, we'll have to change the time of the current service. Change the time of the current service. It has been this time for 75 years. Thank you very much. We meet at 10 o'clock. Yeah, but we can't fit two services in if it's still 10 o'clock. So we're going to have to go so that it's 8:40 in the morning for the first and 10:30 for the second. And I can remember someone jumping up and saying, I beg your pardon. 10 o'clock works just perfectly for me, thank you. Like the service finishes just a few minutes after 11. I sit around here and I talk to my friends. I leave here just after 11:30. I get home just in time and the midday meal is at midday, 12 o'clock. Now, if the service moves to 10:30, that's not going to be possible anymore. And I have to look at him and say, that's right. It's not going to be possible anymore. Like, are you willing to pay the price? Sir, I want this place to grow, but like, what do you want me to do for you? And what might you need to do for that to actually happen? Like, that's a probing thing, isn't it? Like, so you want to be great in the kingdom of God? Absolutely. So here's the pathway. You know, pick up the towel, pick up the bowl, wash the feet. If you want to be great, become least in the kingdom of God, says Jesus. Ah, testing, difficult one. What about the next one? Very different context. I mean, it comes straight afterwards. So they like this is, I mean, what's so great about this is these are stories on the journey. So on the journey, there's this, like the disciples come up to Jesus, like, do whatever we asked you to do. What do you want me to do for you? Like left or right-hand side. Very powerful people asking those questions. Now they're leaving Jericho. And now this is quite different. This is a very weak person. Blind man, he's going. And he's desperate for Jesus to heal him. And Jesus is passing by. And there's something in Bartimaeus that just realizes, if I let this opportunity go, I will lose everything. This is my one chance to maybe get my life changed. And so he calls out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Now, that little phrase that he uses, Jesus, Son of David, is really interesting because Son of David basically meant that he was saying, Jesus, you who are the Messiah, have mercy on me. And the crowd do what? The crowd do, keep quiet. Like, I mean, why would he be interested in you? Thank you very much. It's a very testing journey he's having. Don't you know he's going to be crucified? Don't you know it's actually going to be very difficult for him? And don't you know he was quite grumpy when you asked him for the left and right-hand seats? Like, I mean, just keep quiet. Don't interfere with him. But he persists, like Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stops and says, call him. Like, call him. Let him come to me. And it's remarkable that Jesus would actually do that. And then Jesus asks the question. And think for a moment how bizarre the question really was. Like, so here's a blind man, and Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you? I mean, what did he expect Bartimaeus to say? Oh, I'd love a coffee, thank you very much. Or like, slip me a 20. Like, I mean, what did he think Bartimaeus was going to say? I mean, obviously, Bartimaeus was going to say, I want my sight, thank you very much. That's what I want to do. I want to be able to see. So why does Jesus ask the question? Like, Jesus is the master question asker. Why does he ask Bartimaeus, why, what do you want me to do for you? Like, could it be Could it be that he was struck by what Bartimaeus had said? Like, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Like, Jesus is struck by his insight. You see that I am the Messiah. You who are blind see that I'm the Messiah. And you know what? Everyone else, like everyone else sees you as who? Blind person. Like, that's your category. And if you're a category blind person, then what you need is obvious. You need to be not a blind person. But in asking the question, Jesus says, you know, hold on. Like, maybe you aren't your disability. Maybe you are fine just as you are. And maybe you want something quite different. Maybe you want me to advise you on how to deepen your prayer life. And maybe you want me to advise you on ways to fast. I don't know. Like, you're a person. You're not a category. You aren't a blind person, therefore I know already. What do you want me to do for you? And I don't view you as being blind. I view you as being very insightful because you spotted who I am and you spotted that I can do something and you spotted that sometimes you have to persist and you spotted all these things. So you're not that blind. Thank you very much. I see that you see very deeply. And Bartimaeus ever does say what we would expect. Say, I just want to see. I just want to see. And Jesus says, go. And like, this is very interesting, because in saying go, he would have been essentially saying, go back to the authorities and be declared as a seen person, no longer an invalid as such. And that's his instruction. But what does Bartimaeus do? We're told that Bartimaeus then follows Jesus along the road. He starts by disobeying Jesus and sticking with him and holding with him. That's why Bartimaeus really saw. I mean, he saw who Jesus was, and he landed up seeing with his eyes, and he saw with his soul. I mean, he's a remarkable person. He's on the fringes, but he sees so much more clearly than James and John, who had been with Jesus for 3 years and were part of the inner circle. Like, oh my goodness. That's something to think about. Let me look at one more question that Jesus asks, and we'll finish with this particular one. It's the end of John's gospel. Jesus has actually been crucified, and now he's been resurrected. And he's speaking to Simon Peter, and you might remember that Peter betrayed Jesus, like he denied Jesus 3 times. He was asked the question, do you know Jesus? No, I don't. Do you know Jesus? No, I don't. Do you know Jesus? No, I don't. Like, that was very emphatic. He did not know Jesus. And now Jesus reinstates him by threefold, 3 times, giving him the opportunity to say, actually, I love you. I love you. I love you. And you have a task. Feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. But then he does an astonishing thing. He says to Peter, okay, Peter, like, let me tell you a little bit about your future. It's not all that great. You're going to be crucified as well. Like this is a tough conversation, isn't it? And let me read it to you. So, John chapter 21. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. And when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Now, that's code for saying your hands will be stretched out as you're taken to that place you do not want to go, the place of crucifixion. And that's how they understood it straight away. And that's what Simon Peter understood Jesus to be saying. So Jesus is saying to him, Simon Peter, like, this is your future. You're going to be crucified. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. So you're going to be crucified, but follow me. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved, who was John, was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? What is that to you? You must follow me. Wow, it's an interesting little exchange, isn't it? I mean, it's a sobering, like, Peter, your future like you reinstated. You have work to do. You must follow me. And in the end, you're going to be crucified. Peter's like, wow, that's just too much to take in. Thank you very much. And he sees John walking by. And as he sees John walking by, he said, well, then what about him? Like, come on. Like, if I'm going to be crucified, like, surely he's got to have that as well. Like, it's not fair. It's not fair that it's going to just be me. Others must as well. And what does Jesus say? If I want him to stay alive until I come back, what's that to you? I mean, what is that to you, what his journey has to be? You come and follow me. Like, think about that question. What is that to you? I mean, do you sometimes feel a little like that? Like, so I'm trying to follow Jesus, but I'm the one who's just been made redundant, or I'm the one who's got sick, or I'm the one whose marriage hasn't worked. Well, I'm the one, like, what about other people? Like, it's just not fair. Like, look at them. Like, I've already tried to do this. Like, this is not fair that this should happen to me. Like, what about them? Surely they must suffer as well. Listen, what is that to you? What is that to you? I'm now 66. And as I look back, at the journeys of so many of my friends. And some of them, like, they've been amazing and they're great. And some have been, like, super successful. And others, like, I wouldn't have picked that it would have gone the way that it did. I don't know why the marriages of some of my friends didn't work. I don't know why 3 of my friends committed suicide. I don't know. I don't know why, oh my goodness, why Tony died of cancer. I don't know. He was such a nice guy. I don't know so many things. And I don't know why my journey has been great and really good. But you know what? Maybe in a few years' time, you might not say that. I don't know. None of us know. And we can, like, look around and we can very easily say, well, if I'm going to have this, thank you very much, what about them? And Jesus just said, if I want them to have that, what is that to you? What is that to you? You come and follow me. You come and follow me. So the questions of Jesus, what do you want me to do for you? You who are privileged, you who have nothing, you who compare yourself to other people and say, well, if they're going to have that, I've got... What is that to you? But do you believe that I can do this for you? Let's think again of some of the questions of Jesus. If you are kind only to your friends, how are you different to anyone else? Can any of you by worrying at a single moment to your life? Why are you terrified? Why do you harbor evil thoughts? Do you believe I can do this? Do you believe I can do this? Well, why not let's just be quiet and pray for a moment. And I don't know which of the questions is for you. What do you want me to do for you? There might be a bit of a price tag, but what do you want me to do for you? Maybe a bit bitter. Didn't go the way you expected. What is that to do with you? You come and follow me. Why are you terrified? Why are you terrified? Do you believe I can do this? Lord, we place ourselves in your hands. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. so we will. Go out and feed the hungry. Go out and clothe the naked. Go out and fight for justice. Go out and end oppression. Go out and proclaim anew the old, old story. Go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us. His name is Jesus.